I never had a plum or tuna fish.
Baby, no!
Let me try some new exciting dish.
Baby, no!
Bok choy, collard greens, pad thai. So many foods I haven't tried. I'm kinda scared to eat them. I won't lie. And let me tell you, ah yes, that's why I'm a baby now.
I'm just a baby.
Ah yes, that's why I'm a baby now.
Baby mouth, baby mouth, baby, baby mouth.
Welcome to Baby Mouth. I'm Jimmy Smagola. If you want to support the podcast, and I hope you do. I hope you're enjoying it. I hope you're enjoying enough to support us a little bit. We have a Patreon page. We have a link tree on the Instagram accounts that you can click. You can go to Patreon. You can go to PayPal. You can Venmo me at Jimmy Smagula. There's many ways you can support the podcast. I appreciate it all. I am so happy that you guys are listening to this podcast, and I have to give you a little exciting update. There is a food that I've tried already on this podcast that I've actually willfully ordered and eaten again, and it's pad thai. Pad thai, something I was afraid of for so many years, 44 years to be exact, and I actually ordered it again this week, and it's so delicious. So thank you to everybody listening, because you're motivating me to really get out of my comfort zone and try these things that I've been afraid of, and I'm not really afraid of them anymore. Now, this week is no exception, although I'll tell you, this seems like a very exotic food to me. It's nothing. I don't think I've ever even seen this on a menu. I did know it existed in the world, but it's nothing that I would go to a restaurant and be like, yes, let me have the oxtail soup. It sounds scary. I'm not quite sure what their function in modern day America is. So to help me figure all these things out, I have just truly one of my favorite people in the entire world. She is an Emmy Award winning writer, and she's currently the showrunner of a new show on Disney Plus. Hasn't come out yet, but it's coming out, called She-Hulk. Everybody's so excited about this show. Jessica Gao. Jessica, welcome to Baby Mouth.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, it's so good to have you here. How's everything going? I mean, you're a pretty busy person, and yet you took the time to make me what smells and looks like a delicious oxtail soup.
Well, my favorite mode of procrastination is to stress cook. Like, nothing relaxes me more than spending an ungodly amount of time working on a meal.
And you cook a lot.
I do. I cook all the time. And I love, like, very involved things that, like, are multi-hour cooking, like, recipes.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen on your Instagram a bolognese, which, of course, as an Italian person, I love. But I know how intricate and how much time a bolognese is. Not just meat in a sauce. You don't just fry up some hamburger meat, throw it in a sauce, and call it a bolognese. I mean, and you go for it.
Oh yeah. Oh, I tell my fiance all the time, the cutoff for him to request it for dinner is noon. Like, that's the absolute cutoff time.
Yeah.
Or else you're not going to get it. You're not going to eat until like 2 a.m.
Aren't there like carrots and onions and like what off the top, yes, of your head, like what's in a bolognese that takes so long?
You start off with a sofrito, which is, carrots, onion, and celery.
Delicious.
All diced to roughly the same size. Mm. You saute all of that together with garlic and pancetta. And then you cook, you know, all the meat. But really it's just, it's the sauce, like it just takes hours to simmer. So for all the fats and proteins to break down, for all the acid in the tomatoes. The interesting thing about bolognese is you put milk in it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
All of that, you know, mixes together and it just cooks and breaks down over the course of several hours. Like, you have to simmer it and you have to keep stirring it too, or else it'll stick to the bottom. It'll burn at the bottom. So you gotta stir it. Remember in Goodfellas when, Henry Hill keeps telling his brother to stir the sauce?
Yes,
like,
of
you really
course.
Do have to like keep stirring the sauce.
It sounds like a nightmare, but it's so, I mean, it is one, that's one of my favorite things to eat is a bolognese.
I know. I love it too. I love it so much.
It's so worth the effort.
But what's funny is anytime some of my writer friends see me posting, you know, me cooking on Instagram, they're like, oh, God, she's got a deadline. We know she's running from some demon. It's a cry for help.
It's a it's the most delicious, best cry for help. I mean, your banana pudding is amazing. You've made us some kind of ice cream sandwiches that were delicious. And you even had them wrapped in wax paper.
It was a s'mores ice cream sandwich. Oh. And it's such an easy, fun summertime treat for people. So for listeners who want to try it at home, it's just graham cracker with marshmallow fluff and chocolate ice cream. Super easy. You can make it with kids. I don't have kids, but I imagine it's a fun activity to do with kids.
You, like you said, you don't have any kids, but you have such a maternal spirit and you love to feed people. Like when I approached you about doing my podcast, I was like, look, you don't have to cook. I've never eaten an olive. Like, just tell me a kind of olive you enjoy. And you were like, no, no, no. On the Christmas break, on the hiatus, I will cook for you. I have to cook. And you did. And you brought it very safely over to my home. And now I have the soup. But have you always had that instinct to cook for people, to take care of people? Because it's very much who you are.
Yeah, I have. I mean, a big part of it is cultural. I'm mm-hmm. Chinese and, you know, Chinese people, you have to be a good host, you know, that's kind of drilled into you. Uh-huh. And a big part of that is offering food and drink to people. And if you don't overfeed people, then that means you didn't provide enough, you wow. know? And so that's already ingrained in me, but also I really love cooking. I've cooked since I was a kid. I was a latchkey kid and, my parents oh. worked a lot. So, you know, I'd have to wait till whenever they got home to make dinner. And sometimes that's like 9 p.m. or something. And mm-hmm. I got sick and tired of waiting. So when I was around 12, I think I was in middle school around 12, I asked my parents to get me a cookbook. And so they went to Costco, my favorite place on earth, and got me like the Better Homes and Garden cookbook. And I just started going through it and learning how to cook on my own. And I would make myself dinner so that I didn't have to wait.
And I can imagine that it was a way for you to comfort yourself as a child, I'm sure, while you were alone waiting for your parents, because I know you're an only child. Yeah. And I'm sure mm-hmm. nowadays it's still a way for you to comfort yourself and now other people.
Yeah, I feel like there's two types of only child you get. Like, you know, and there are two extremes. Like you either get the kind that's like a little adult and has had to be a little adult since they were a kid because yes. they were alone or only around other grown-ups. Or you get it just depends on the kind of parents they had, or you get the overly reliant, like very extremely coddled, like eternal baby only child. And I'm obviously on the abandoned spectrum yeah. where I had to fend for myself.
I know, but you turned out to be such a good cook for it. So it was kind of worth it for everybody that knows you.
It was all worth it.
We're reaping the benefits.
I really love feeding people. I don't know. I'm sure there's some other deep psychological reason why. But you know what? It's a good thing for everybody involved.
Oh, it's a great thing for everyone who knows you. It's so funny because I'm not an only child. I have a younger brother. But we were so coddled that we are both like only children.
Well, you basically have two babies in the family.
Exactly. My brother is also a baby mouth. Like we don't. And when the more I interview my mother on this podcast, the more I realize that I was just super babied, super coddled, whatever I wanted. I was King Jimmy. She says often, like, if you didn't, you know, if you looked at a food and you didn't want it, I didn't make you eat it.
Yeah, she said she would just make you something else, which is shocking to me.
I know. Were your parents like that too? Were they kind of like clean your plate parents or?
Not really, but you know, and you know what's interesting is like my parents are very similar to a lot of immigrants, which is that they are, I wouldn't say they're baby mouths, but they're a different version of baby mouths mm-hmm. where they only eat their own food. You know, like my parents only eat Chinese food. Like they won't even, they barely branch out to even other Asian foods. Like they only eat Chinese food.
Never had a cheeseburger, like, never had a steak.
They've had, you know, like once in a while they'll eat white foods but they don't love it. Like you can tell they're tolerating it and they don't really love it. They kind of just don't quote unquote get it, you know? But lucky for me as a kid, it's like Chinese food, it's just very good. And
so good.
And it's very easy to make good, just simple at home Chinese food. And, you know, it's always family style. So there's always multiple dishes. So you'll find something you like. I'm sure I went through a picky phase. But what's interesting is, you know, in Chinese cuisine, Chinese cooking treats vegetables like as if it were the protein, you know.
Yes.
like you can make a completely vegetarian dish, but it still has to be seasoned and well cooked and you know, bring out like certain flavors. It's not treated as just like something you boil and then eat for the nutritional value. It's its own dish. And so when I was a kid, when I started going to school in America, I immigrated when I was 4. But when I started going to school in America and kids would talk about like, yuck, I hate vegetables, it was really weird to me because I thought, what a random aspect of all foods to just choose this one food group to dislike. But then when I started eating food in the school cafeteria, I was like, oh, this is why you hate vegetables. It's right. just like boiled canned peas and canned carrots, you know, like now I get it. But at the time I was like, you know, before I started eating cafeteria food, I was like, why would you? It was just so random to me to choose this one part of food that you didn't like.
That's so funny.
And then I got it. Yeah. But it's funny whenever I, you know, the few times that I've had to like take my parents to, you know, a white restaurant, it's just, it's always a to-do. It's always an ordeal. They don't understand why, like, not every restaurant is family style. You know, if you go to like, say an Applebee's or something, you have to order your own thing. And I remember one year, cause you know, I love Italian food and my parents know that. And one year I asked my mom where she wanted to go for Mother's Day. And she said, you know what? I'd like to try Italian food cause you love it so much. I want to know what all the fuss is about.
Oh.
So I took her to, I think I took her to Taroni.
Oh, delicious.
And well, cause she told me she requested this at 10 PM the night before Mother's Day. So I was like, I don't know where you think I'm going to get a reservation. But they had a reservation. And so I took her there and, you know, we ordered some pasta for her, some simple pasta. The funny thing is, you know, she's eating it. And I said, well, what do you think? And she said, why is this $20? It's just noodles.
Isn't that? And also, I have to say, Taroni, very small portions, which I'm sure is part of the Taroni experience. You know, they don't want you to be overstuffed, but I like to be overstuffed when I have a pasta.
Yeah, same.
I want to be stuffed.
I want to have some I want to have leftovers that I can take home and then enjoy shamefully at 10 p.m.
And were your parents happy that you were going to be a writer? Did you always want to be a comedy writer, or was that your dream since you were little?
No. Well, when I was really little, when I was in kindergarten, I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be like an author illustrator because, you know, like all the books I saw had pictures. So yes, I was like, I'm going to be an author illustrator. And I told my parents I wanted to be an author illustrator. Like I wanted to make books. And they told me, well, I hope you like eating garbage and sleeping in the gutter because that's what your life will be. And I said, well, that doesn't sound appealing to me. So I guess I won't be doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I went through a bunch of different things that I thought I would want to do. But the weird thing is I was always really into art. I was constantly drawing. And my mom, oddly enough, really encouraged the art. Which I thought was so interesting because that's not a stable career. I would argue that that's probably less stable than being a writer.
I would agree with that.
And so when I went to college, I was an art major and like in fine arts, but very quickly I was like, oh no, this is terrible. I don't want to do this. This is awful. I hate everyone in this program. Everyone's so pretentious because it was like fine art, you know?
Yes.
And I was not into it, but I also there wasn't anything else I wanted to do. So And I didn't want to read or write during college, so I was just stuck with it, and I got an art degree.
Oh, who knew?
Yeah, so I graduated with this art degree, very useless in general, because you don't need an art degree to be an artist. Yeah. You just need to make art.
Yeah.
But it's infinitely more useless if you've already decided you definitely don't want to be an artist. Yeah, so I did a bunch of random odd jobs. I moved to England for a while. I came back to LA. I was working in marketing, you know, just not knowing what to do with my life. I was just, you know, I was an office temp working at a marketing agency. And I, you know, I was only supposed to be a temp for 2 days at this marketing company. And I ended up working there for a year. And they tried to promote me, which made me freak out and quit on the spot when they offered me a promotion. And then I thought, okay, I need to get serious. I'm 22. I got one foot in the grave. This is my last chance to figure out what to do with my life before life completely passes me by. And I had an intervention for myself. And I said to all of my comic book friends, and I said, you know, I need to figure out what to do with my life, you know, so give me some ideas. And all of them said, you should write. You should be a writer.
Really?
And I said, okay, well, I'll take your word for it. And I thought I should write for animation because I love watching animation. I was so entrenched in comic books that I thought, this is a good transition. It's a medium I understand. And also, as I understand it, you know, some people do the writing, other people do the drawing, so I don't have to draw.
Right.
Which was something that I'd established I hated at that point. But I didn't know anything about entertainment. I didn't know anybody in the industry. And so I just emailed everybody I knew and I said, I've decided to be an animation writer. And if you know how, tell me. And one person wrote back to me and said that they had a friend who worked as an assistant at Nickelodeon. And that friend said, tell your friend there's a writing fellowship that she can apply for.
Oh,
and
wow.
sent along the link. So I looked at I clicked on the link. I read the guidelines. I Googled what is a spec script and how to write a spec script. And then I wrote a script and I got into this writing fellowship, and then I got hired out of the writing fellowship.
What year was that?
This was 2006.
And 14 years later, you're an Emmy Award winning writer.
Yeah. So, I mean, thank God for that sequence of events, because I truly had no idea what I was going to do with my life.
Yeah, you know? If someone said to you, if all your friends said you should be a park ranger, I'd be talking to you while you're riding a horse or so. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
How did you know how to write a script?
I really just approximated it. I'm sure it was riddled with like formatting errors, but you know, I wrote a SpongeBob SquarePants spec script, because I thought, well, it's Nickelodeon, so I better do a spec script of a Nickelodeon show.
That's smart.
And I watched a lot of SpongeBob, so I figured I understood the character. You know, I got the tone of the show, and so I thought up a SpongeBob episode that I would want to see, and I wrote it out, and you know, and I approximated. And I'd never seen a SpongeBob SquarePants script, and I later found out it's because that show is storyboard driven and not script driven, so they don't actually do scripts. So I just kind of, you know, approximated what I thought a script would be.
And you got your first job after that fellowship, or because of that fellowship?
During the fellowship. The fellowship was supposed to be a year long, but 3 months into it, I had two different Nickelodeon shows offer me staff writing positions.
Which one did you do?
I did this. It was an Amy Poehler cartoon called The Mighty Bee. It only ran for two seasons, and I wrote on it for the entire run. And that was like my crash course in like how to write for TV.
That's incredible.
Totally. It taught me a lot about imposter syndrome, I have to say, because when I started, I definitely had imposter. I thought everybody went to film school. Everybody took screenwriting classes.
Yeah.
I didn't read or write during college. You know, I just bullshitted my way through a lot of critiques. And I thought sooner or later, someone's going to figure out that I don't know how to do this, you know? And every day was, I just felt like today might be the day that they find me out and throw me out the doors. But because I had to crank out, there was no time for me to spiral, because I had to crank out so many scripts. I was just constantly buried in writing scripts that by the time I had a moment to stop and, you know, take a breath and look around, I'd written dozens of scripts. And then I started reading other people's scripts, and I realized, oh, they don't know more about writing scripts than me.
Kind of goes along with this podcast. I mean, I'm at a moment in my life, maybe because of the pandemic or maybe because of my age or both, where I want to do things that scare me. On that subject, why oxtail soup? Now, can we talk about the ox? Because I don't know.
Yes.
Do you know anything about the ox, or many, I guess you would call oxen?
Look, it's just a cow. Like, you know, it's just a cow.
It's a cow.
So here's the thing about oxtail, is that oxtail used to be this very, very cheap cut of meat that mostly people of color like mm-hmm. to eat, you know, like huge in Asian cooking, huge in like black cooking, American black cooking.
Yeah.
And it's because it was like, and in the tradition of both of these cultures, like, it's a cheap cut of meat. It's kind of a something that, you know, the more dominant white culture would have discarded. And being like, you know, very practical, like we've taken this kind of cheap cut of unwanted meat and made some delicious dishes out of it. And so it used to be very cheap because white people didn't want it. In the last couple of years, I've noticed that oxtail has like quadrupled in price. It's really, really crazy. And it's because, and it's so funny that it was so egregious, the price hike, that I was like, I have to find out why. What is going on with oxtail?
Yeah.
That all of a sudden it became so expensive. And I Googled, I literally typed in, why is oxtail? And the first thing that came up was so expensive.
Wow.
And the consensus is just that it's become very trendy. Like a lot of like, you know, trendy restaurants have started using oxtail more. So yes. That became this trendy thing. And now there's a demand for it. People love it. It's become more mainstream. So now it's harder to find. And I had to go to multiple places to find it. Whereas normally it used to just, you know, I didn't even have to think about whether or not I would be able to find oxtail.
I said to you, like, do you want me to just eat a beet? Because you don't have to go to 9 stores. Like, there's so many things I've never eaten before. And also, it's funny that I'm so glad you know the history of it, because to me, it's like a bougie item. Like, if I saw oxtail soup, yeah, you don't see that at a diner. You know what I mean? Like, right. You're not going to go to Cassell's and get oxtail soup. It seems like a bougie, high-end kind of a soup. So it's interesting that it started off as like a kind of regular cut of meat for the working people of the world.
Yeah, yeah. And so the soup I made for you, and I love oxtail. There's a lot of flavor in it. And I've loved oxtail soup since I was a kid.
Wow.
But this soup I made you is not actually, it's not a Chinese soup. It's actually a Mexican soup called cocido.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's like a beef and vegetable soup. And it's made with oxtail, predominantly oxtail, but like usually you throw in, you know, multiple cuts of different kinds of beef, like a lot of filler meat. You could throw in like beef chuck. I get a little bougie with it, and I like to mix in some beef short rib with the oxtail.
Is that in my soup that you made?
In your soup, there's some, but I don't know if the container I gave you has any rib. I made sure to give you a lot of oxtail because I want you to eat the oxtail.
Yes.
But so there's onions, potatoes, carrots, zucchini, and corn and cabbage in this soup. And
it's in a
clear broth. Yeah. And it's just one of my favorite soups ever. It's just a really great comfort food, perfect soup weather right now.
Yes, I'm so cold.
It's just one of my favorite soups ever. And it's impossible for me to make, you know, less than gallons of this soup whenever I make it.
I don't think you make less than gallons of anything ever.
That's fair. That's fair. I always cook as if I'm about to feed like a family of 20.
Yes. And we are so lucky. We're so, the people, let me just speak for everyone who knows you, who's listening to this podcast, and just say, we are so lucky that you cook for 45 people every time. Because I will drive no matter where you are to eat. I mean, you also included some banana pudding just for fun, because I guess you may. And your banana pudding is so good. I'm so excited to eat it later. But I'm going to go get the oxtail soup and bring it out and try it. But let me go get it. Okay, I have returned with the soup, people. Now, I have to say, this looks delish. It's been simmering on the stove for an hour. This looks really good. Now, let me find a piece of the oxtail first to try. Let me see here. Oh, here's a big piece of meat. Now, does that look like oxtail to you, Jessica Gow?
Yes.
That's a big, now it looks like there's a bone in the middle of it or something.
Yeah, there's a round bone in the middle. That's the tail.
Okay.
I wish people could see the look on your face.
They might be able to. I might, with your permission, I might put a little video on here. Because this is a little, I didn't know there was going to be a bone in the middle of it.
Oh, do you have a problem with eating meat off the bone?
No. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't prepared. Now, so I can't just take a big bite of this meat. I have to kind of eat around the thing, the bone.
Yes.
It smells delicious. I'm smelling it. Oh, it smells so good. It really does. Okay, here we go. Oxtail. I'm going to eat just the piece of oxtail. First time ever with Jessica Gow, Emmy Award winning writer. I just love saying that. All right, here we go. Oxtail. Let's give this a try. Oh boy, with the bone in it. Oh my God, tastes like a pot roast. Oh.
I thought you would like it.
Do you know pot roast?
Oh, I love pot roast.
That's what it tastes like a delicious pot. Oh my God, it's so freaking good. I'm having more. Oh, you know, and it falls off the bone. Why would I be so afraid to eat this?
Because when you hear tail, you know, if you're a little bit squeamish, if you're a baby mouth, it sounds a little intimidating. It sounds a little yucky, because then you actually have to start thinking about the part of the animal you're eating. But look, slow cooked meat is slow cooked meat. And meat off the bone is always the most flavorful.
It's so tender. It's falling right off into my mouth. It's literally scalding hot. I think I may have to go to the emergency room after this. But
I was going to ask you if you let the soup cool a little.
But I don't care because it's like burning my mouth on a piece of pizza, you know, when it's so good and you just, it's so good. The meat is so tender and full of flavor. Is this hard to make, the oxtail soup?
No, it's not. It's just very involved. You know, it takes a long time. You have to cook it for hours. And also I have to, I stagger when I put in the vegetables so that everything cook, cause everything cooks up to different times. Oh. And so they have to all be cooked to the same kind of level of doneness.
Now I'm holding up a piece of corn on the cob and it's probably like a 2 to 3 inch piece, you would say, right?
Yep.
Would you just take this out with your fingers and just go for it?
Oh yeah.
You can't really eat this on a spoon.
Yeah. You know, and the bigger pieces of oxtail I eat with my hands, you know, you got to take it out and chomp on it like a little animal.
Why didn't you tell me? I was just trying to balance that on a spoon.
I thought you were trying to be dainty because you're on camera.
No. Because I don't really post. I might post a little video of this because I think it's fun. I want to try this corn.
Yeah. Pick it up with your hands.
Yeah. I'm going to try the corn. It's so hot. Now my hands are burning. I mean, is there anything better than corn on the cob? Do you love corn on the cob?
I love corn on the cob. And so this corn gets cooked in the soup. So all the, like, you know, soup broth gets cooked into the corn.
The flavor of the corn is very soup brothy. But I love this. This is one of my favorite things I've eaten on this podcast.
Yay!
This might be my number one favorite thing I've eaten on this podcast.
Oh, that makes me so happy. And I just want to say, you know, I made this soup yesterday too. I would love, you know what, when all of this is over and we can actually hang out in person, you're going to have the soup fresh too.
I'm just still eating the freaking soup. You have to give me the recipe for this and I have to post it for the people. Can you do that?
Yeah, I'd happily. So my big secret is how I make this broth really, really extra delicious and rich is I buy bone marrow and I put it in the soup and that really gives the broth of this very rich flavor.
Now, if you had told me that before I ate the soup, I would have been scared because I don't know what bone marrow, when I think of bone marrow, I think of like human transplants.
Like, right. Like what you're donating. It's just, I mean, really, you're just getting chunks of bone, like actual beef bones that are cut and the little, you know, the little hollow inside the bone, that's the marrow.
And that has flavor in it?
Yes. It's very, very rich. And it's delicious.
How often would you say you have the oxtail soup?
Well, this soup I used to make pretty regularly, but it's been a while. It's been, I think, probably a couple of years since I actually made this soup. I was a little rusty, and I'm a huge soup person, and there's a new soup that has taken over my life. So now I make this other soup all the time.
Which is what?
It's a Korean soup called Kamjatang, which is a spicy pork neck and potato soup.
Pork neck?
Pork neck, yeah. Again, another cheap cut of meat, has incredible flavor. If I didn't tell you it was pork neck, you would have just thought it was...
Because I've never had the neck of anything of any kind.
Right. But I mean, there really is no difference. It's just bone and meat, you know, meat on a bone.
My grandma used to like a chicken neck or the turkey neck. That's turkey what neck. She used to enjoy for Thanksgiving. She would request the turkey neck. And she lived to be 86 and happy.
Yeah, so she was doing something right.
Yeah, I guess eating the neck isn't so bad. But you, that soup is so good. My question is, if I went to a place and had oxtail soup, would it taste like this? Or is this your own special creation?
No, if you went to a Mexican restaurant or an El Salvadorian restaurant, they would have this soup.
It's interesting because it doesn't taste Mexican spicy or anything to me, you know?
But this is a very, like, this is a very, very common soup that's, you know, on most menus.
The carrots. I'm just back in the soup. I can't wait anymore. Jessica, the carrots.
I mean, is there anything better than a nice hearty soup on a cold winter's day?
Because the carrots are like mushy. They're filled with the broth. So you don't even chew them. You just kind of crush them with your tongue and the roof of your mouth. And then the broth explodes in your mouth and it's warm. I'm so happy. I think I've fallen in love with you.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
Oh my God. I'm going to have one more of these carrots.
And so I completely forgot to give you the kind of accoutrement that come with the soup. Normally you do a squeeze of lime, you do some cilantro.
I don't want that.
And it's usually served with a side of Spanish rice.
Delicious.
And you can dump the rice in the soup. You can dip some of the broth in the rice, but that's usually what it's served with.
This is going to make my boyfriend Bridger so happy because I like Mexican food, but I don't love it. Like he literally will eat Mexican food every day, three meals. He is nuts about Mexican food. But this is another kind of thing that I can order now that I love this. Oxtail freaking soup.
Oxtail soup.
I love it.
Now, this would have been so much better a few years ago when oxtail was super cheap, because then it would have been a great cheap thing that you could make.
I know. And you said earlier, you had to go to several stores to find the oxtail.
Because I usually get it at Costco, and Costco is completely out. But
now I want to ask you a quick question about Costco, because I've never been to a Costco.
Oh, my God.
Now, here's my question. It's a club that you have to join, right? And you get a card.
Yes.
Or something.
Yeah.
There's a membership fee.
Yes.
But isn't it for people that have like 12 kids? Don't you buy in bulk there, or
No, you do buy in bulk. Everything is in bulk, but...
But it's only you and your husband-to-be, fiancé.
Yeah, yes. And even though he is a giant man,
he
still counts as one person.
He's not that giant. I mean, he's a large person, but he's not like, you know...
Well, I just meant he's 6'4".
Yeah, he's 6'4", but he's, you know, he's not 6'9". He's not like a basketball, you know, giant.
That's true. That's fair. I don't know. I think part of it is that because I cook so much, I do go through like a lot of the, you know, I can buy bulk produce.
Yeah.
And it's not an egregious amount, you know? So it's like you buy 6 bell peppers instead of 2, you know?
Oh, I see. And because you're always cooking for 40 people.
Exactly.
You can go to Costco.
Yeah. And I mean, truly Costco has phenomenal steaks. Like, they actually have USDA Prime. At most supermarkets, they usually only carry USDA Choice.
Really?
But Prime is like 2 tiers above Choice. And they have USDA Prime ribeye steaks, and it comes in 3 or 4 packs. And it's like, you know, for the two of us, if I get like a 3 pack, we each have a steak for dinner, and then we can split the third one for breakfast and have steak and eggs.
Oh,
you know?
My God. I love it.
Oh, it's great. I took Bridger and he loved it. There's Costco in like every country.
Really?
And what's cool is they have stuff that is reflective of where their location,
right?
Including at their food court. Cause Costco's famous for having a great food court.
They have a
that's
food
super
court?
Cheap. Oh yeah. And it's super cheap and delicious. They famously have a hot dog deal. It's like this enormous, like all beef frank, with a fountain drink for $1.50, and the price has not changed since the 80s.
I gotta go when it's safe for me to go. Mm-hmm. We're going.
Yeah.
Once I get my vaccine, and you have to go because I'm not a member of the Costco club.
Yes, it's true. You have to go with a member.
What's the membership fee? Can I ask you? Is it?
Yes. No. There's tiers to it. I think the base tier is, I believe it's now $60 a year.
Oh, it's not a lot.
It's nothing.
Nothing.
Well, especially considering you literally could get everything because there's a pharmacy in it. You can get all of your medication there. There's an optometrist. You can get all of your optometric needs.
Where is the Costco location? Where do you go?
Oh, and there's a tire center. You can get all your tires
Come
there.
Come on.
The closest one to us is the Atwater one.
Atwater? It's right there?
Yeah.
I'm going to go. I'm signing up for Costco as soon as I close this Zoom box.
I love it.
That is wild. I didn't know you could get tires and a pharmacy and everything.
Oh, yeah. And they have a photo center. I got, they make a photo throw blanket, and that's my favorite gag gift to give people. Is I love finding the worst possible photo of somebody and then making it into a photo blanket and then giving it to them.
I love it. I love it. Bridger just gave me for Christmas a photo puzzle of our dog.
Oh, I've done that for a truck and our cat.
It's so fun. So I've been working on the puzzle, and it's not easy because she's pretty much pink, white, and a little black and a little brown. And then the background is in a portrait mode, so it's kind of just a blur. Very difficult, this puzzle.
Yeah, you need you need texture and patterns.
540 pieces. It's a lot. It's too much.
Is.
But you know what the hell else am I doing, really, besides this podcast and a puzzle?
That's a lot.
Now, Jessica, I have an email from a listener. They have written in to babymouthpodcast@gmail.com with a food nightmare, a food question, something that's eating at them about food. And I want to share it with you, and then maybe we can give them some advice. So this says, "Hello, Jimmy. I started a relationship in quarantine and it's going great so far, but one thing I worry about is my girlfriend's dietary restrictions. She's vegan and I'm not. Any thoughts on how to balance my eating life with someone who has such a different diet? Thanks, Samantha in Stockton, California." Well, thanks for listening, Samantha. That's a really good question. Do you have any advice for Samantha about how to balance her eating life with her partner who has such a different diet than she does?
I have a lot of friends who are vegan, and, you know, and I'm a staunch omnivore. And yes, I think first and foremost, it depends on how strict your vegan friend is, because there are vegans who like don't want to be around meat consumption, you yes. know, and so you have to respect that. Yes. But there are other people who are like, I don't care if you do it, I just don't do it. And right. so first and foremost, it depends on where their boundaries are and where their comfort zone is. And with some of my, you know, with my really close vegan friends, usually if I go out to eat with them, I usually just go to a vegan restaurant with them because mm-hmm. it's easier. There's always delicious things that, you know, like I said, like I feel like American cuisine has this weird hang up with vegetables. And but for me, it's like there's always delicious vegetables that I can eat, you know, like I don't have to have meat. But then there are also certain restaurants where any vegan has had to learn how to navigate eating around omnivores. So yeah. like I'm sure there's restaurants where they've figured out, okay, these are the things I would get at this particular restaurant, right. you know. So it's really not that hard. It really just depends on how willing you are to go eat at a vegetarian or vegan restaurant. And it's never been a bummer for me to go to a vegan restaurant. There's always good stuff to eat. But if, you know, it gets tricky if you then move in together because.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Right. Yeah. Cause then you have to negotiate like how comfortable they are having meat in the house. Mm-hmm. And that I don't have any advice for, because I honestly don't think I would be able to be in a long-term relationship with a vegan, because I wow. love eating meat so much, you wow. know, and I love cooking. Like, I just don't think I could do it.
You know, it's funny. I was going to ask you, like, do you ever think it's okay for couples to get things at different restaurants and eat them?
Like you both order to take out from two different places yeah. and then you eat together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everyone should get to eat what they want.
I do too, but it always feels weird to me. I'm always like, this is weird. We should always be eating at the same, but we don't always have to eat at the same exact restaurant.
No, it's very similar to your upbringing, because, you know, I imagine if your mom had made something for the rest of the family that you didn't like, she would make you your own little special thing, right?
Apparently that's what she did. I mean, I don't really remember, because it was just, I guess I just thought that's what every mother did, but apparently that's her special thing. If I didn't like something, she'd just make me something else.
Oh boy, Prince Baby.
Probably one of four items, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. And you never got sick of eating the same things over and over?
No, and even now, I could eat chicken parm every day. I could eat pizza every day. Like, even now, I could literally have a cheeseburger every day. But, you know, I have diabetes. I have mm-hmm. type 2 yes. diabetes. So that yeah. was going back to, like, the question from the listener. That was an interesting shift for my boyfriend and I, because when we met, I wasn't diagnosed with diabetes, so I was eating everything. And now I have to be much, much more regimented in what I eat. You know, the thing I don't have not gotten into yet that I want to is fish.
Yeah.
Like, I tried the tuna fish on this podcast. Not delicious.
I wish we could go to a sushi restaurant together, because I do think that when you get introduced to sushi, like, you know, there's kind of like, there's specific things that you should order that are kind of baby steps into.
I never had raw sushi. Fish.
It's so delicious. It really, really is. I just love food.
But it's just a fish that they took out of the ocean and they cut it open and they give it to you? That sounds crazy.
Yeah, it's sliced very specifically, you know, and I mean, sashimi is just, you know, they take fish, they very fresh fish, slice it and then serve it to you. And then, you know, you can dip it in wasabi and soy sauce if you want.
And you enjoy that?
Yeah, well, and then the sushi that you think of when you say sushi is nigiri, which is it on like sushi rice.
Because I've had a California roll.
Well, that doesn't count.
Didn't enjoy it and never had another thing of sushi.
Well, California rolls, I mean, that doesn't really count as sushi. I mean, some of it doesn't even have, most of it usually is like imitation crab and some vegetables.
And it's cooked, I think.
Yeah, the imitation crab is. And so it's plant-based. It's not actually crab. And then it probably has like avocado, cucumbers, rice. I mean, there's no fish in it.
People love sugar fish out here.
Oh, I love sugar
fish. It's expensive and people enjoy. I mean, you know, millions and millions of people. You could even probably say hundreds of millions of people love sushi. Wouldn't you say that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I never had it. I'm too afraid to eat it.
It's definitely one of those things where you need to take baby steps. Like, you can't just dive into the deep end. You should definitely do baby steps.
Do you think it's an acquired taste?
It is, because I hated sushi when I was younger.
Then why did you keep eating it? Because that's also one of my things. If I don't like something immediately, I don't ever want to eat it again.
Well, people loved it so much that I thought, like, I need to give it another chance. You know, like,
right.
You know, maybe the first time I didn't like it, I didn't have the right thing. Because there's so many different kinds of things you can get when you go to a sushi restaurant. So then I was like, maybe I didn't get the right thing. Maybe I didn't go to the right restaurant. You know, or maybe, you know, now that I'm a year older, maybe my taste buds have changed. You know, yeah. this is me talking myself through it as a teenager. And then and when I was 18, my mom and I took a trip to Japan and we had this like beautiful meal that I just basically had to choke down because I didn't like it, but I didn't want to be rude. So I choked down this gorgeous multi-course meal that we had. And I really didn't like it, but so I took a break for a few years where I was like, you know what? Maybe I just don't like it. But it honestly was as I'm now recommending to you, it was the spicy tuna on crispy rice at Katsuya that was the gateway drug into getting me to like it. When I started writing in TV, you know, every TV writer who works in Burbank goes to Katsuya in Burbank. So, you know, we would go for lunch and, you know, and I would get like, you know, some dumb cooked food, you know. And so the people I was with were like, why don't you try this? Like, everybody likes this. So I tried the spicy tuna on crispy rice. And I was like, this is actually delicious. So then I started eating that. And so little by little, you know, maybe the fourth time I go, I'll then baby step and try something else. You know, then I tried like, you know, some seared albacore or something like that. And then I tried, you know, then it was just little by little, I would add more and more. And then finally, I moved on to, you know, actual just a piece of raw fish. And by then, I was really into it.
I mean, I'm going to try that. That scares me. Like oysters, too, which I think, is that like raw oysters?
Yes. That's why it's so important that they're fresh. Yeah. That's why it's so important that they're fresh, that they're not, that they're still alive. That
scares
me. I don't like oysters. No, I'm not a fan of oysters. And I've tried a lot. The best I can do is I'll have an oyster and I'll go like, this was fine. But I don't love oysters.
You don't chew the oyster, I don't think. Don't you just swallow it or something?
You chew it a little bit. You give it a light 1-2 and then you swallow it.
Even salmon, Jessica Gao, I don't enjoy.
Well, salmon is the kind of thing where you don't want to get that delivered because it really, you do want to have it like right out of, you know, either the grill or the oven or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you have to cook it just right. Cause if you overcook it, then it's dry and yucky. You can't you don't want to undercook it. Like, it has to be cooked just right.
You enjoy salmon?
I love salmon.
Oh God.
And I got to tell you, salmon sushi is fantastic.
I don't know. I'm going to try sushi at some point. I definitely want to do it on the podcast. I want to try it, but
it's hard because sushi doesn't travel well. It's the kind of thing that you got to go in person to have.
Well, maybe I'll do a live one or something eventually.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, eventually. Eventually, I think that's the way to do it is to like actually physically go to a sushi restaurant and have it there. And then you have the full experience.
Yeah, you sit at the bar, they make it there for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, fish, I know how good fish is for you, for me. I know it's like the healthiest thing you can eat. And I had salmon one time, our friend made it for us, and it was I liked it. I almost said it was delicious, and I feel that's a lie. It wasn't delicious. It wasn't like, it was delicious. The kind of most important thing I took away from that experience was I don't feel super full, like heavy. I felt like, I ate something, and I'm satiated.
It's just good, lean protein that turns immediately into fuel.
The taste of it, though, is not great, the salmon.
Look, it's never going to be better than a cheeseburger.
Oh, my God. It's all I want every day. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on to Baby Mouth. I love this oxtail soup.
I'm so glad.
I'm going to go reheat it, and I'm going to eat the rest for dinner. It's so good.
Yay.
And thank you for always feeding me.
Oh, and I will do it forever.
Oh, God bless you. Well, I'm going to call my mother now and see if she's ever had oxtail, and I could pretty much guarantee that she never has. And I could also pretty much guarantee that she's going to say she would never eat it, which is hilarious because it tastes like a delicious pot roast. Jessica, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, everybody, we're bringing in Mom, Lois Smagula, the woman, the myth, the legend. Here she comes. Lois, can you hear me?
Yes, you're very loud.
Oh, am I too loud?
A little.
You can lower your volume on your headphones, you know.
Okay.
Remember I taught you how to do that on the side?
Yeah.
Did you do it or no?
It's all right. I don't want to bother right now. It's fine. All right.
You look very nice. I love your winter sweater.
Oh, I got this, not this Christmas, last Christmas from Aunt Rhody. Mm. This is the first time I'm wearing it.
How come you didn't wear it last year?
I don't know. I was saving it like I save everything. And it was in the closet and I just found it this year.
What are you saving it for? What are you going to
do? I don't know.
What, the winter ball of Lyndhurst? The winter gala?
I have no idea.
Where are you going?
Nowhere.
Oh, what have you been up to?
Nothing. We waited. We got our recliner delivered this morning, 8 o'clock. So that was good.
How old is the old recliner?
It wasn't old, but it broke. I don't think it was 3 years old, and it broke.
What was the brand? Broke. We should say the brand.
I don't know.
I would like to know.
I don't know what it was, but it wasn't any good.
You know, you've become such a star on this podcast. Our listeners will go out and protest in front of the store that you bought the three-year-old broken recliner.
But anyway, it's fine. We got a nice one. So.
And now what are you going to do with the old one?
We're going to throw it out. It's broken.
I know, but I wish you and my father, who are 75, would not do this yourself in the icy winter conditions.
No, it's fine. It's everything melted. All the snow
is
quite
gone. I know, but isn't it heavy, the chair?
Well, no, we're going to bring it out the front door, so it's not far to the sidewalk. Mm. It's not far. We drag it. We don't, like, actually pick it up.
Right. It sounds dangerous for people in their mid-70s.
Nah, we've done other things, put out.
Okay, what else have you put out?
Oh, that bar that was in the dining room.
Yeah, but probably how many years ago? 20 years
ago? No, the one that's been in there now that we converted.
Oh, it's gone?
Well, that's gone. We put this other old chair out that was heavy. We put a lot of things out.
Wow.
My whole kitchen set out and there was nothing wrong with it. And somebody picked it right up.
Oh,
took
good,
it.
Good. You could donate that stuff too.
We tried, but no one would take it because the table was glass.
Yeah,
and they wouldn't take it. So we put it out front, and then someone, I forget who, said, "Oh, we can come in another month." I said, "Forget it."
It's difficult to get things donated. They don't want.
I know, and it was a nice set. Nobody, I mean, there was nothing wrong with it. But anyway, I saw someone pass and put it in their van. Yeah, I was happy.
You and Daddy could be a moving company, it sounds like.
Oh, I don't think so.
I mean, you shouldn't be moving all that stuff because one spill, you know, one fall, that was
I know, it's over.
Well, that was the downfall of Aunt Liz, who lived to be 94.
96.
96. And then she fell, and that was it.
Well, she was standing by the sink, and the doctor said she fell because her hip just snapped from being brittle. She didn't really actually fall.
Oh.
Just like her hip snapped.
I thought she fell outside of her house.
Oh, she fell a couple of times. But this, the last time, she was standing by the sink and her leg gave way. And it was not because she was falling. It was because her hip was so brittle, it just broke.
Bones were so brittle. Well, 96, yeah. I mean, and
I know.
Not in a wheelchair, completely mobile, and she lived by herself.
And her house was immaculate. She did all the work herself.
And she did a lot of amazing cooking. Didn't she, for Christmas Eve, cook all the different fish?
Yes, yes.
How many kinds of fish are there? 12?
I thought seven.
Seven fish? I don't know.
I don't know because I never went. Aunt Rhody always went, but I never went because I didn't like any of the fish.
I know.
But
you had smelt, squid.
And she used to make the macaroni with the nuts.
That's not fish.
No, but that's what she would make that. And then that had some kind of fish gravy on it.
Ooh.
And bacala.
Mm,
bacala.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a fish.
I know Bobby Bacala from The Sopranos, which we've been watching from the beginning, which you guys must have watched every episode, right? When it was on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love that show.
And then I was on it. Could you believe it?
No. And you were on it that episode, like the end. And I'm saying, I think they cut him out because she never came on and it was like 5 minutes or something before it was going off.
I know.
Then you finally came on.
I know. It was so, that was like, I did all these Broadway shows, all these things. And like the best thing I ever did was be on The Sopranos because it was such an iconic show. And also like those actors, I remember the woman who played Ginny Sack. Remember Johnny Sacramone's wife?
Yeah. Didn't she come from Rutherford?
Yes, because at the table read for my episode, I sat next to her and she said, oh, where are you from? And I said, Lyndhurst. And she goes, oh my God, I used to work on Orient Way.
Yeah.
Can you believe that? Oh, you got a phone call coming
in again.
That's
all right.
Who's calling?
I have no idea. I'm upstairs. Oh, we always get prank calls too.
Well, they're not prank calls. They're not teens sitting in their room calling you and scaring you.
What do you call them? I don't know.
They're not scams. They're like robocalls. I don't even know what you call them. Spam.
Spam. That's what I was trying to say.
Spam.
Spam.
But I put you on the do not call list, but it doesn't seem to
matter. It doesn't work. It works for a while, and then we get the same calls.
What are they? Do you know?
Well, like public service always calls. They want to lower your bill, and I don't know, different places call. But now I don't even answer them.
No,
I don't
have to. And they prey on the elderly, of which I guess you are considered.
I definitely are. But I don't answer them. Then most of them don't even leave a message. If it was important, they would leave a message.
And you know, most government entities and companies, they will never call to ask you for your social security number.
Oh, I know.
But I'm sure a lot of people give it.
Well, if you're older, they probably would.
And they call and scare you and say, like, you know, your house is going to be repossessed if you don't give me your information or whatever. And people probably go for it.
Yeah. Older people that live by themselves and don't know any better. So anyway.
Well, this week on the podcast, I ate with our friend Jessica Gao. She's an amazing Emmy Award winning writer. Could you imagine she won an Emmy Award?
Wow.
And she made me oxtail soup.
Oh my God.
Did you ever have that?
Are you kidding me? No.
It tastes like a delicious pot roast.
Oh, my God.
It's the tail of an ox.
Of an ox. I know.
The bone is still in it.
Oh, forget it. And you ate it?
Mom, no. It tastes like pot roast. You have no idea. It's so good with carrots, potatoes, corn on the cob, big pieces of corn on the cob, zucchini. I swear to God, I tasted it. I said, oh my God, it's pot roast. You know, like a pot roast?
Yes, I love pot roast. I'm not loving a oxtail.
No, you would love it. Why wouldn't you try it? I'm telling you.
I wouldn't. Of course, I know it's an ox. So I'm not trying it.
But
your grandfather.
Yes.
He used to eat rabbits and squirrels.
He used to eat squirrels. He didn't used to eat squirrels, Mom.
Yes, he did. And rabbit. And, deer, but a lot of people eat deer meat. Pheasant.
Yeah.
And that's expensive. He would eat all that wild.
Yeah, but squirrel. I've never heard of anyone in my life eating a squirrel.
Yep.
What would he do? Go down the park and shoot him and bring him home?
No, hunting, not down the park. They go hunting.
And you wouldn't eat it?
No, thank you. Nobody ate it but him. He was even, grandma didn't eat, nobody ate it.
How would he make it?
Always with some kind of sauce. I don't know.
Like a red sauce? Like an Italian?
Yeah, probably. Like a red sauce, I remember.
Squirrel? Ooh.
Rabbit?
Well, rabbit's probably delicious. A lot of people, my friends have had rabbit. I would try that. I got to put that on my list of foods I haven't eaten as a rabbit.
It tastes like chicken, he said.
That's what everybody says. But yeah. Squirrel, I don't know if you, I don't know if that's correct.
It is correct.
I can't imagine that, eating a squirrel.
Well, it's the same thing as eating a rabbit. What's the difference?
Well, what's the difference between eating an oxtail and a cow, a hamburger, a cheeseburger? What's the difference?
I know. Chicken? It's animals. Well, I eat chicken. That's animals.
Of course. You love chicken.
Yeah, we eat a lot of chicken.
But I love this soup, Mom. You should really try it. Maybe I'll send you some. And you, it's. I swear
no,
to God,
thank you. Don't waste your money. I'm not eating it.
It tastes like pot roast.
I don't care. I don't want it. Thank you very much.
It's so tender. It falls right off the bone.
Feed it to your friends. I don't want it.
Maybe I'll send it to you and make a videotape you trying it.
No, I'm not going to try it, so don't send it. Oh, I'm not trying
it. What about this? Oh, it's so good, but... would you ever eat venison, the deer? Have you ever tried that?
No, but that people eat that all the time.
Venison, yeah.
You have to just prepare it the correct way.
And rabbit, what's the most exotic meat you've ever eaten that you could think of? Did you ever try anything exotic? Or an exotic fish, eel, octopus, sushi?
Swordfish I had when I was little. Swordfish.
How did you like swordfish?
I was like 12 years old. I don't remember, but I remember swordfish, and I don't think anything else I tried.
Nothing exotic that you ever tried?
No, oysters? Thank you. No.
No oysters?
No caviar? No.
Caviar's good. It's salty. I tried that before. It's just salty fish eggs. What about mussels?
Daddy loves mussels. I don't like them.
How about like catfish po' boy sandwich?
No, thank you.
Okay. You know, I obviously take after you. We have certainly learned this during this podcast that you are a baby mouth first, and I'm the second baby mouth too, because you're the same as me. You won't even try it.
No, I won't try it. Forget it. I'm not interested. Ugh. I just think of the animal and then I say, I don't want it.
How about a buffalo burger? Would you try a buffalo burger?
No.
Bison burger?
Nope.
Wow.
Nope. Did you ever try them?
Yeah. It's not as good to my taste as a cheeseburger, you know, but it's good. I mean, the bison burger is good. And, a buffalo burger, I guess it's kind of the same thing, bison and buffalo, but it's not bad. It's good.
Wow.
Quail eggs. You ever had quail?
No.
Duck?
No. Duck, no, but I know a lot of people have duck. Duck, I think it's kind of greasy.
You would enjoy a Peking duck. Oh, delish. It's crispy.
I think that's brown meat, isn't it? Dark meat.
It's like a grayish meat.
Yeah, no,
How
thank
about
you.
A goose? Christmas goose?
No, thank you.
You wouldn't...
I'm not trying any of it. Don't waste your breath.
A Christmas goose? I've actually had that before.
Well, I'm glad because you have tasted a lot more things than I ever did.
The goose is gray, that meat. I remember it being like a gray meat. Yeah. But it was delicious.
I guess, you know, too, it's all the way you prepare it. I mean, you know what I mean?
So, but this, you should start your own Baby Mouth podcast, because then you could just try these foods on a podcast.
But I don't want to try them.
You should try them.
I want to try them.
It's good to try things and open up your... I'm excited to try sushi. Like a raw tuna?
Oh, yeah. No, thank you.
Okay. Well, what are you doing tonight? Anything exciting? It's Thursday.
No. No, it's New Year's Eve now. We used to go out when we were young, like 10 couples. Now we just stay home.
10 couples?
Oh, yeah. We had so much. We'd go to a restaurant. We'd have so much fun.
Oh.
Those days are gone. Well, we're not going anywhere with this pandemic.
You can't go anywhere right now.
Right.
But you could.
I mean, we would like maybe go out and eat dinner like 6 o'clock. You know what I mean? But always come home when we got older for the 12 o'clock, but now we're not doing anything.
Well, when I was a kid for New Year's Eve, you'd be asleep at about 10 until about 5 to 12.
You'd
watch the ball drop, and then you'd walk upstairs and go to sleep. Yeah. Remember I used to bang the pot outside?
But yeah, the good old days, right?
Maybe I'll bang a pot tonight, but I don't know if I'll make it to midnight.
I know. And I got up early this morning, like 7, because the guy said they would be here between 7 and 11 or something, but they came after 8.
They always give such a big window.
4 hours.
I know, it's ridiculous. Just don't give a window. Just say, we'll be there Thursday sometime. I hope you bought this recliner from a different company than the first one.
Yeah, we went to Ashley Furniture, but that's not really that good a company, but we couldn't find any anywhere. So anyway, I didn't want a real, real big one, but it's good.
Well, enjoy your recliner, Mom.
No, your father. I don't know if I'll get a chance to sit on it.
I know. Whenever I come home and I sit on it, he gives me a dirty look.
That's his chair.
He's pissed to have to sit on the couch.
I know.
Yeah, but that's all right. Good. He's the king.
Yeah.
Let him sit on his chair. All right, Mom. Have a good night.
Have a happy New Year.
Happy New Year. You should try the oxtail. You would be shocked.
I know, but no, thank you.
Oh, it's like pot roast falling off the bone. Tender, juicy pot roast. Delish.
Well, you enjoy it for me because I'm not having it. All right. Stay safe.
The Baby Mouth theme song is performed by me and was written by me and Jesse Vargas. Jesse also orchestrated, recorded, and mixed the song. The Baby Mouth artwork was created by Tim Quartier. You can follow the Baby Mouth podcast on Instagram and Twitter at Baby Mouth Pod. Tell me about your own personal food nightmare. Have you ever been forced to eat something horrible at a fancy party or on a first date? Is there a food you're afraid to try? I want to know all about your scary food experiences. Email me at babymouthpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to listen and subscribe to Baby Mouth wherever you get your podcasts. And please, don't forget to leave a review.
Baby, baby mouth.